You got to accentuate the positive. Wow! I feel good. A little bit of feel good goes a long way.
You're listening to Karen Swain, teacher of deliberate creation, accentuating the positive, showing you a way to a better life.
Accentuating the positive, it's not just fad, it's sanity. Who in their right mind would accentuate anything else?
Clap along if you feel like that's what you want to do.
G'day, g'day, and welcome to another show, Accentuating the Positive with Karen Swain. We are streaming live on various platforms across the internet on YouTube and Facebook, and also streaming out of 107.7 on the United Public Radio Network and 105.3 on UFO Paranormal Radio Network. So we've getting the gang together. It's so great to be here. This is my second live show. So great to be on this radio station with all these amazing people with their incredible shows, spreading the message of higher consciousness and spirituality and psychic ability and connecting to our Star Nation family. And today I have an amazing guest on the show with me today called Jeff Selver. I'll bring him up and say, g'day, Jeff.
Hi there, Karen. How are you doing?
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Jeff has an amazing story that we're going to hear about today, and he's bringing it all together. I've been doing these shows for, about 15 years now. And when I started in this conversation, there were very compartmentalized aspects to this conversation, with people talking about death and near-death experiences and people talking about consciousness or people talking about spirituality. There was the guru set and then the UFO hunters, and, you know, everything was kind of compartmentalized. But now in 2024 and, you know, over the last few years, it's all coming together as one conversation. And I think that your story really speaks to how it's all really one conversation, right, Jeff? Right.
Powerful. Yeah, that's a great analysis. Fantastic. I agree with that, definitely.
Let me tell you a little bit. There's a few comments coming in already. I should say hello to people. Penny, hey, hi. She says hello, Jeff. And
hi, Penny.
Karen. So let me tell you a little bit about Jeff. I've got his bio here. He's written an amazing book. Jeff Selver never thought of himself as an alien or a UFO guy. With a passion for management and leadership, Jeff was a financial advisor for a bank and worked in sales and corporate training and became a motivational and mindfulness leadership speaker. Suddenly, at the age of 41, screen memories came to light and broken memories of unbelievable alien contact began to open up in his mind. Jeff would learn the details of these traumatic events, which happened when he was a teenager and a young adult, matched what he can only understand as a genetic activation. I love that. I've actually never heard anyone say genetic activation. They've said DNA activation, but genetic activation is fantastic. Understanding the origins of these events opened up a lifetime of obscure memories and alien contact or ET contact. Fundamentally, Jeff was shown that what humans understand about spirituality, life after death, dimensions, God, the soul, and psychic powers are just the beginning of what these beings are all about. Their capacity, understanding, and utilization of this knowledge is so much greater than humans can imagine. When Jeff's memories returned, they included a message from the Greys to tell humanity about his experiences. Jeff now realizes how valuable his experiences are to many people. For people who've had their own experiences with the phenomena, yet have trouble understanding it, they can receive validation and confirmation from Jeff's story that what they've experienced is not necessarily a negative thing, but is focused on evolving human consciousness. Jeff began presenting at contact events and in UFO groups, sharing his story in detail, providing research and cooperation with other experiences. And for over 20 years, Jeff has been under the tutelage of a Vedic teacher, where he learned Vedic philosophy and meditation. So I know what that's all about. I was married to a Hare Krishna for a long time.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah,
got into the Vedas. For Jeff, his story proves the spiritual elements of the gray alien experience to help people learn about their spirituality. And you've written a couple of books, but the book that you've written is called The Rising and The Alien Plan to Build an Enlightened City on Earth, which I want to know about. And you've got a workbook for that, how to create the Rising workbook, how to create your own rising. It's just around the corner, it says. Have you got that out yet?
It's finishing editing and covers being designed, and it's like right, it's going to come out
right around the corner.
Right around next month, yeah, it should come out, yeah.
And Jeff currently resides in Vancouver with his spouse, and your website is your name, jeffselva.com, and Diane's online. Hi, Diane. She says, hi, Karen and Jeff.
Hi, Diane.
So let's get into your story. How you started, before we went live, you were talking about as a teenager you got into sort of spirituality. What prompted the teenage Jeff to get into spirituality?
Yeah, good question. So those teenage years, what started it all? So it may have been a natural fascination. It's hard to kind of pinpoint exactly, but I think that I had a contact event where I saw the afterlife and I wasn't aware of it as a teenager. And it's wasn't too much longer after that. So without having the memory of the event, I started to, I never had thoughts like this as a teenager. And so I started to imagine what it'd be like to die. And I was very intrigued with, I kind of was actually excited for death. Just, I can't wait to die. So I'm outside of my body and I'm flying around and I can't wait to go places with my, outside my body. And I also started to really, just understand that there's a problem in our world. Our world is struggling. Maybe I had a connection with nature right away. So I kind of saw we're very destructive with nature, what's going on here. And it's not that I lost faith in humanity, but I saw that we're struggling. And somehow, right away, intuitively, I said, I think it's a spiritual thing. I think that we don't know who we are and that we're struggling with that. And it's a spiritual problem that is the reason we're kind of doing what we're doing with humanity, with the planet, destroying the environmental damage and also corruption and kind of all these problems that kind of that surround us. I saw them as spiritual problems when I was a teenager. I was also a musician and I focused on that. And so those thoughts were occurring to me around 16 years old. And I let them percolate. They just kind of sat there. And I didn't really do too much exploration. It was by the time 1997 started to roll around that I decided I needed to explore this part of myself. And I really felt I had deprived it. As a teenager, I was obsessed with my music playing and playing in bands. And so I kind of really wanted to give myself some time to experience spirituality. And I actually picked up Celestine Prophecy, the classic New Age books of the time. And I had some synchronicities right away. The whole James Redfield's Celestine Prophecy is about synchronicities. And that, when you really experience a true synchronicity, a meaning-making event, you're reading about something and you never have a statistical event like this that just lines up so perfectly. You just sit there wondering, what the hell is the nature of the universe to make something like that happen? And it really just pulls you in. I think, I think a synchronicity that is a meaning-making event, you read something, all of a sudden that day, someone else in your environment, says something very significant, or a dream even. You have a dream and then it reflects back out in the world that very same day. You might dream of a person you haven't met in or haven't seen in years, and all of a sudden you dream about them. And then that day you run into them on the street. Those kind of synchronicities, you're left perplexed, right? And that was happening to me at the teenager, at that kind of 1997 time. And so I started actually delving into spirituality. It started with Carl Jung, and I really gravitated towards Carl Jung's kind of like self-knowledge analysis style. Like, I'm going to study myself as a way of understanding humanity. And he really delved into dream theories, and synchronicity was a part of his studies, and all of that fascinated me. And I guess you could say he was a role model for me at the time. And I read several of his books and was really driven to understand my own psyche. And in my alien, in my book, I really put the two together that, you know, the aliens had shown me some powerful spiritual things like the afterlife. And then they kind of buried the memory and I'm driven to pull it out. And so having a book like Carl Jung's telling me that there's something deep inside myself, I was sold. And so I there's something in me and I got to pull it out. And I was driven to get something out of me. And I distinct memories are even part of my life now where I can remember back to that time and just, wow, that pull was so strong that I knew something was inside me that I had to get it out. And Carl Jung was the beginning of it. Dream analysis. And it sparked several, like, just constant psychic events started to happen to me. And I don't really know what books maybe I would associate with that. It just was self-exploration. I got into earth energies and I got into Wicca, actually. I don't write about that anywhere. But just the idea of worshiping nature really triggered something inside of me. And it got me closer to some kind of spiritual energy that was inside me. And so I really started to do moon rituals and all of that. Tarot readings all of a sudden were part of those early years. And I was just drawn into the mysticism of it all. I just felt like something else was outside of me that I could touch and I needed to know and experience that. And I was driven and it was spawning psychic events. I kept having, you know, as I mentioned, the dream of someone with what you'd see that day. And sometimes those messages were pronounced. They would be something very specific that was about spiritual growth. And that just shocked me that I would have a dream about spiritual growth. And then a synchronistic event would happen that day that seemed very related to it. And it felt like I was being guided. Something was guiding me and I didn't understand that. And I would have energy sensitivity where I'd be close to someone. I wasn't visually seeing them and I could read them and I wasn't aware that they were, you know, they were close to my proximity. And then I would turn and I'm like, oh my God, I just saw that person in my vision without seeing them. And I had a whole piles of, you know, a variety of synchronicities that really were propelling me. And it led to something. That was the kind of what I maybe didn't expect. And I wasn't, I've kind of talked about this before and I've in other interviews and in my book, I wasn't really for what eventually occurs, which is maybe this kind of like God realization and spiritual activation, if you will. I wasn't going down the road of looking for something like that to occur. And it's a really weird thing to happen for someone, a teenager who's a musician, you know, watches bands at bars. I was actually in music school at the time. And that was my focus. And to have what happened was part of this big mystery of my life that would remain a mystery. And I could never find the answer to what created it. And it's, I just call it a consciousness event. I repeat those words because there still isn't actually anything except for maybe an activation. The genetic part of it was actually, I can now find research that kind of supports these ideas, but that's only a fraction of it because there was the God consciousness part of it. There might've been a Kundalini rising. It all culminated at the end of 1997 and it was extreme and it had a synchronistic message in my world to leave my life. So what started at the beginning of 1997 culminated at the end of 1997 in a single year. And I had no way of framing it except for just a message from the universe. That's all it could have been. I couldn't even have, I'd had no way of framing it any other way in my life. And yeah, I was paired with kind of a God realization and yeah, the genetic aspect part, which is very fascinating. You bring that up and yeah, so that propelled me to travel. So I listened to those messages. First, I resisted the messages because I was fighting against it because it changed me and traumatized me what it actually was. And then I listened to it. And so I started this kind of new journey that was still very spiritual, yet it had this kind of traumatic, kind of weird side to it, which is I didn't understand exactly what I was doing and why I had gone traveling. And then, but a really powerful and fascinating aspect of it was I'd learned about visioning. So I think one of the books I really always want to give props to is Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. I just, you know, that answered some of the God stuff of my story. Is it thumbs up to that? Yeah, yeah.
Thumbs up, one of my favorites.
Yeah, one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And it's just so well written and articulated so intelligently and challenges amazing. All the mental aspects of the human mind about God. Like, oh, absolutely. God can't be real because tornadoes kill people. And there's a reason that there's kind of a larger infrastructure to the nature of the universe that all that stuff makes sense. And the other part was the visioning aspect. And it really hit me. I was soaked. I was like, okay, that makes sense. And immediately I was in a scenario while traveling within the first weeks, 6 weeks, I ran out of money basically. And so I'm like living, I'm a hobo. I'm a full on hobo living out of a car with nothing. I have no support system anywhere. Just my spirit was the whole point. And I visioned money and I had a, I'll just tell the story because it's still very wild and pronounced. So I'd read about it in that conversation with God book, had a vision. And so I said, okay, I'm going to follow that. And the point was to, you know, to see it fulfilled, live in the state of that fulfillment, be the being state, feel it completed. So I was like, okay, I have money now. How would I feel? And I felt I wouldn't be looking for money if I was in the state of having money. So I'm not, I'm going to live in those feelings that money is here right now. And there's something very, you know, breaking of time about visioning that is just so pronounced and powerful when it's really successful. You really do feel like you're touching your, the absolute part of you, the consciousness that is living in the no space, no time aspect. When you are able to live in the present moment as if it's the future and you feel the fulfillment of something, and then you just live in it, even though your circumstances do not display it. And then within days, I had this kind of actually a vision. It was a pronounced intuitive vision to call my mom. And I was traveling and I was on this very like removal of society, you know, inspiration. So I actually kind of abandoned my parents and they were very worried for me. And so to call my mom was a very out of the place thing to do. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to follow this as a message. And I didn't relate it to the visioning. I just felt like it was something I was supposed to do. So I called my mom. And upon calling her, she's first off concerned for me. What are you doing? Why are you traveling? What's this all about? And I had to just convince them I'm okay. Don't worry about it. And then offhandedly, she's like, oh, by the way, you have a tax return coming in and it's about $2,000. And I'm like, okay. And I just went boom, boom, boom. That was my vision. That was just all like, it all culminated into this kind of thing, this moment of reliance, and the reliance manifested into reality. And I was sold. That's real. This visioning stuff is real because the way that all rolled out, I was supposed to call my mom. I could feel it. And then that money like lasted because I was just traveling and living off of nothing. That money just sat there the entire time. And it helped me for several months, actually. It was really powerful. And then I had consecutive moments like that of reliance while traveling. So traveling was this very powerful thing to do to put me on edge and to only rely on my spirit. And I think it gives me, it's still part of my power today. So that kind of self-reliance energy, that God is real, my heart is real, visioning is real. It's a very powerful place to live in and to come from. And I'm very grateful for, and it's really crazy to say the aliens are the ones who did it. And so if they are the ones who kind of really, without my knowing at the time. So yeah.
The aliens did it. Well, it's a part of all of our power. It's just that most of us don't know it. Most of us don't know it. But let me ask you, So you had this sort of inclination to start reading spiritual books and then you went traveling. This all happened when you were young, like a teenager and a young adult. And after the whole traveling and learning about that, you went into banking. Is that sort of,
it's, you know, we got several decades in there, but I was traumatized by the traveling. So I was put into an extreme circumstance to find my spirit. But I just couldn't resolve the mystery part of it. And the mystery part of it created an inner trigger to start pushing my spirit away. So by the end of traveling, I actually was resisting. If I had a feeling of my heart, of some kind of higher consciousness, I actually started to get terrified of it. It was a weird twist that ended up reoccurring in my life because.
No, it's interesting. Really, it's fascinating. I also want to ask you, you know, all these contact experiences that you had as a teenager and a young adult.
Yeah.
Basically, after the experiences, you had no memory, like none of
them. No, they sealed everything up. And I really, there's a couple, I think I've written a Reddit post that really tries to explain that the best, how I understand it. I'd be happy to go into that. I think that there's three things that I think really zero down to how the aliens are able to do this to really just seal up the memory. So you have no idea whatsoever.
Tell us, what do you think? Yeah, I often wonder, how do you guys do that? But yeah, I've been told.
Yeah, how do you do that? Number one is I made the agreement to not. So when they, the whole thing starts at 16 years old, where I made an agreement with them. So it was a verbal, I guess a telepathic agreement. They wanted my permission and I needed to agree to it. And that happened at 16 in 1993. So that's the first contact event, I call that. And in that contact event, she says, if you know about this, that won't be helpful to us. So you need to not know about this. So you need to keep this secret from yourself. And it was kind of like a telepath, their eyes they get really intense and they can get really into the subconscious of the mind. And you could maybe call it a program, but I was very willing at the time. And I understood actually that, at least I trusted, let's put it that way. I wouldn't say I understood, but I trusted at the time. And it was a program to have a part of myself not look at it. So even if there was an inclination or there was something off of my world around the contact event, the moment it happened, I had a program in me to say, nope, I won't look at that. So that's number one. And it was actually surrounded by this kind of like love I had for the beings. I actually felt really good on their crafts. I felt really good in their presence, though they are very off-putting. When you can kind of get past that, it's a very beautiful environment, beautiful, powerful environment. Something is going on with the crafts themselves. They're alive and you feel really good in the environments actually. So I actually had a love for it, and I actually, the subconscious part to not look at it was actually surrounded by like an agreement that I loved this. I loved what was going on. And so, that was definitely effective. Number two is that, so there's 3 points about the memory. Number two is I kind of can't tell if the human brain itself is distorted moving. So first off, there's a dimensional thing going on here. I can't tell if this is outside of time or if they, when they show up, they affect the environment with an electromagnetic frequency. I can't tell. But the idea that the human brain alone actually is having a distortion as it moves through that dimensional field, and then you're left with fragmented memories. That could be an aspect of what's going on. I look towards the missing 411 phenomenon, which also has people who seem to be interacting with cryptoids, and they lose memory as well too, and they seem to maybe move in and out of kind of dimensional states. It's hard to understand fully, but it seems to me, I'm convinced that if the human's moving in and out of these realms, it affects the brain anyway. And then the third is the aliens. I mean, this is where the research seems to be going, and I seem to have some contact events that for me that proves this, validates this for me. The aliens can stop time. So you are walking home and you think you just walked home and you don't realize you had a contact event and a full contact event. Time was stopped. You interacted with something. You went into a craft. You had a conversation. It could have lasted for 20 minutes, a half hour, whatever. You come back down and you think you're just walking again. And there was a full contact event there. And as insane as that is, I am convinced this is where it's going for disclosure and for humans, that the entities can do some wild things that we aren't expecting, like stop time. So put all those three combined, it seems very easy for a human to miss some of these. And actually, one of the things I told my friend who was still trying to wrap their heads around it, I said, think about how many times you go for a walk around the block. And then think about, did you reflect on the walk? You didn't even think about the walk because it was just a routine thing for you. So you don't even reflect that you had something, you just walked around the block. You don't even have a part of your brain that says, oh, that walk was so good. And I went down that street and I liked it. You just did it. And then you didn't reflect back on it. And then that's what they did with me. It's like a moment where I didn't even think about it to reflect back on. They put a contact event in there because it was a mundane part of my life. And so they hid these contact events in these weird mundane moments of my life. It's very wild.
I think humans are so easy to manipulate in that way because we are just preschoolers when it comes to knowing how to utilize our minds and the brain and thinking it. Many people, you say meditate and they're like, oh, I can't meditate. My mind's all over the place. Like, we just haven't got a hold of our mental skills, our mental capacity. Yeah. And I've asked my mob about this too, like, how do they do that? And they've shown me, but I don't have the intellectual understanding to really grasp it, but I get a bigger picture. They said, think about frequency. They said, think about hypnosis. The reason that you can recall stuff in hypnosis is you go into a different frequency in your brainwave, a frequency that humans are not always in. Children yes. are, like a theta, yeah. different levels of theta brainwave, like children are, but as adults, we go more into alpha, beta brainwaves. We're mostly predominantly in beta brainwaves where we're thinking and questioning and worrying and stressing. And so if you're having a situation, like having an experience with these beings, it's all wrapped up in a different frequency that's yeah. tucked away in your subconscious that you're not accessing through your normal, like yeah. your normal frequency. So they sort of showed me it's all about frequency, and I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't completely understand it. I don't know if I will understand it in this lifetime. Maybe I will. But yeah. hi yeah. to everyone. This is Alison. Let's go into the memory of the, I'm just looking at the time because there's so much to your sure. story. Let's go yeah. into the memory of the contact. So when you're in your 40s, the memory starts to come back. So that must have been an agreement with the mob as well, with the gray mob, I should say. Like they said, okay, you're not going to remember this, but then at some point you will. And then at some yeah. point you'll go on to talk about it, and then you'll help humanity.
Right. Wise. Right. Yeah. It's not laid out as concrete. It's really interesting how they do operate. They operate very symbolically. So they're kind of saying things without giving, like humans are so concrete. We want, you know, full agreements. We want full understanding. We want it all to be laid out in a way that makes sense for our logical mind. And they, in the agreement I made at the 16 years old, they were basically saying, you'll be part of helping humanity, you know, move into a new phase, into a new era. And I thought that meant something else. I thought the agreement to discover my soul, which was, sorry, I didn't explain that. That was the agreement when I was 16, was to discover my soul. I thought that would be all tied together. And for them, it wasn't. The helping humanity part would be something that would happen much, much, much later on in my 40s. So yeah, you're kind of right. There was kind of an agreement, and I thought that's where it was happening very early on, and it didn't. And then by the time I'm so the 25th contact event is when I'm 20 in 2016. Can't remember my age. I think I was 37. That's when they say, your memories are open now, and we want you to write it out and tell people what you learned and tell people everything about what happened with us. And they don't explain this is going to help the world or anything. Well, they say, they frame things really wild. They say, you need to help humanity. And they really frame it that way, like help humanity, get your memories open. And it's kind of intense because there's going to be, and they actually frame it with a meteor. I really hate it. They're like, a meteor's coming. You need to save humanity. Get this memory open now. And it's really intense is what they do. And that intensity actually is what breaks through the conditioning. It's very psychological, actually. It's kind of a mastery of psychology on their behalf because, you know, I had a lot of resistance in my world to these ideas anyway. Never mind just me, but the people that are surrounded in my life. And it's just really hard when there's, like, we're preaching to the choir, I think, is in part. And there's a whole fragment of society that has nothing to do with aliens or UFO. And they really aren't comfortable with this topic. And it still lives in the world of tinfoil hats for them. So these ideas of coming out like this were very foreign to my entire world. So these ideas of saying a meteor's coming, open up these memories, tell the world about us, save humanity is what it was, kind of had me shocked. And I was having dreams as soon as that contact event happened. I was having these intense dreams that a meteor was coming. And I kept feeling it being paired with becoming more spiritual. It was a really weird, like, why is this happening into me? And it was in me for several years, and I never understood it until all this unraveled, the whole contact events kind of unraveled. But sorry, was there an initial question? I think I'm distracted by my own story here. Oh, you're muted. You're muted, Karen. Karen.
I'm muted. No, I can't remember what I was going to say. Yeah, but
it's epic stuff. Yeah.
Epic stuff. Yeah. So they woke you up by saying it's urgent. Oh, yeah, you're saying we're preaching to the choir, and I was going to say, well, we are pretty much, everyone that's listening has heard all this stuff before. And I want to say hi to a couple of people. Hi, Jan. You were on Jan's show. experience at interviews recently, and he's tuned in. But there are so many people waking up. So there are so many people tuning into
that's
this
true too. And I don't want to overstep that, because you're absolutely right. Like I get flooded with people who are new to this information, and that's actually true too. And so you're very right about that. And that is something to do with the government part of this. It did something to the mind. I say this to everyone now. You know, when I'd been public already, and I'd given my book out to people, and they all knew about it. And at my work, they knew about it. And when David Grush spoke to the Senate, I walked to work, and I got a clapping, standing ovation. Basically, they were all are you happy now? Are you? And they're all like proud. And I'm like,
so work as in work in the corporate industry.
In my job, and they were actually all like, because they all knew at that point I'd been very public, and so they were feeling I was a bit, you know, this validated it for them. That's what it was. The government's part of it validated it for them. And so you're right. There is a body now coming in that's trying to figure this stuff out. That's true.
That is just so cool. That's so cool. Yeah. That is real. I really loved hearing that. But let's get into what happened, the memories. Like, what was the first memory that came back? What did they do? How did they take you? What did they do? What did they
say? Yeah. So it all starts with a screen memory. So, okay. Actually, it's so detailed, and I always have to kind of find ways to make the information succinct for the audience. The bottom line is that I wasn't an aliens and UFO guy. I was unsettled by something. So they had unreleased they had opened the memories up, but I didn't know to go down this avenue of aliens and UFOs. 2016 was when they did that. And for about 3 years, I was unsettled. I couldn't figure out what it was. I'll always give credit to Jeremy Corbell's documentary on Bob Lazar, because it's what made me say, oh, these things I was into as a teenager and as a kid, maybe they're real, these UFOs. And so I went to a YouTube channel called Finding UFO. It's really well done, because it's just people's videos of anomalous objects in the sky. And what happened was I started to kind of regularly watch these videos. And these orbs and things that were part of my traveling. I didn't explain this. There's so much detail. There were orbs and things that was happening when I was traveling, when I had the consciousness stuff when I was in my 20s. They came back when I started watching those videos. And that changed everything. That all of a sudden it freaked me out, because I thought, what's going on here? Why is there a connection here? And it took me some time. It's best to say, simplest to say, I had a screen memory and I didn't quite understand that part. I didn't understand what that would feel like and how that occurs. And I didn't quite get it. Though I'd read about it in Whitley Strieber's book as a teenager, I didn't quite understand it. And
what was the screen memory? What was the memory?
So an owl behind my house when I was a teenager. And the owl had these highly reflective eyes. And I couldn't quite understand at the time. I didn't think anything of it, or, you know, for 20 years, I didn't think anything of it. And it started to bubble up. Let's put it that way. It's hard to something. There's a series of events, and that's all laid out in my book. But something said, look at that. And and I actually, all of a sudden, when I had that inclination, I all of a sudden realized, wait, what is this memory of an owl behind my house? And it had these highly reflective eyes, and it was perched on the path going into a forest behind my house as a teenager. And then I actually put together, I remembered something about Whitley Strieber's book, having an owl that wasn't there. And that kind of went, wait, so these orbs are flying around my house. Something made me kind of like look at that. And I started to freak out actually about it. And I actually was able to go back to the location. It's here in Coquitlam. Coquitlam is just outside Vancouver, where I grew up, was just outside where I'm living now. So I was able to go there in about a 50-minute drive. And when I had that screen memory in my mind and I went back to that location, I could just feel it. It's impossible to describe. Another event occurred that I wasn't aware of, and I could feel the displacement that I had. I grew up with a certain set of beliefs about what had occurred, and then there's this other thing that had occurred, and I could feel it. I could feel some depth about it. I got lured out, actually, is what I could feel. I could feel something had telepathically lured me out as a teenager. And at the time, I hadn't even remembered that there was one night that I randomly decided to, I was sleeping in bed. And I was 17-year-old, I was sleeping in bed, and I decided to get up, for unknown reasons and get up and go to the forest. And I only did this once. And that turned out to be a contact event. And it's these, this is how they hit it. It was one thing I did once. And they, it was so indiscriminate. And I, for me, I just felt like I was being a, an adventurous teenager. I'm going to go and challenge myself and go to the forest in the middle of the night. And it turned out actually what it was, I was being lured out and there was a contact event. But that just had, it's called memory compactification. When you have layered memories on top of things. And so just touching that memory had the first contact event. So I could feel something had happened in the forest. But it was layered with this image of a field of a high school field, like a soccer field, and I could see the chalk lines in the memory, and I'm like, what? Like, what's going on here? And it took me like weeks, maybe months. I can't remember how long it took to figure out what's going on here. And what it was I had the first contact event. So what the screen memory is the second contact event, and the second contact event is breaking up the memory of the first contact event. And so it's the feelings, right? It's the feelings of being around the aliens all kind of compacted with the imagery I had in the very moments of the teenager. And so it's all kind of sealed together. And so by having the second contact event, even just touching it, I needed to understand that first one. Why was I seeing a field? And then what it ended up being was the first contact event was me walking home as 16-year-old. And I had walked over in the middle of the night going home, and I'd walked over a soccer field. And I literally had a contact event right there. And the alien kind of came down from the craft and froze me. And it was a terrifying moment, but also kind of a weird moment of recognition. And then that opened up all the childhood stuff. So it was like really domino effect, one after the other, one after the other, one after the other. And then once I had the kind of first two, it just started to the third. And they kind of like third and then maybe the sixth. And then I kind of was like, oh, there's a fourth. And it kind of like broke out like that. And I had recorded some of the details through weird, I was recording all this stuff in journals at the time when I was a teenager, and I had the journal still. Yeah, I know. I'm like, thank God, because if I hadn't, I probably would have had trouble putting it all together. And journals, I had the dreams that were associated with the contact events. I had the visions associated with the contact events. I had the growth and development laid out. At one point, I think an alien is interacting with me as I'm going through the consciousness event. And I actually say that in the journal. It's really wild. So I have the kind of history all laid out by this journal, and it helps me put it all together. And so, yeah, that's that. There's seven contact events before I traveled. Yeah.
I'm just going to interrupt you because I just want to remind people that you're listening to Accentuate the Positive Media with Karen Swain on 107.7, the United Public Radio Network. We're streaming live, and on 105.3, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And we're listening to Jeff Selva, who's sharing his story of his extensive ET contact as a teenager. And you said it opened up so you obviously were being contacted as a child as well as a teenager.
Yeah.
And then you remembered it in your 40s, and then you look back and you had journals about it all.
Yeah.
So at some point you've gone and had the experience, you've come back, you've written about it, and then completely forgotten about it. Or you've written about what you could remember, like you've written about. But I want to get into, because time's slipping away, I want to get into what you experienced. So they take you, they call you, you walk into the forest, you're like hypnotized, and you walk into the forest, you don't know why, and then you meet in Gray and they take you on the ship. What did you see? What did you experience?
Now, I said this in the last interview, and it only makes sense. Every individual contact event is different. That doesn't make sense. So the entire thing is a picture. The entire thing is a big story. And it only makes sense from the first contact event. Though I had the childhood ones, they're kind of more impersonal. So the first contact event is that one where I'm walking on the field, going home, and on that soccer field. And that's where it all starts. And so basically the alien comes down. It's a terrifying moment. And just utter pure terror and panic because they froze me. And they froze me also because I wouldn't have, there's no other way. I can only reflect back and be like, well, there just wasn't any other way. I couldn't interact with that thing without it stopping me and then trying to convince me. And so that's what ends up happening. It's trying to get my permission to go on the ship. It says, come with us to our ship and we'll bring you right back. And the whole thing makes sense to me that they would want my permission because of how involved it'll end up getting. And so I agree, because I kind of start remembering the childhood stuff, and the part being that I'm not harmed. Like, oh, I'm on the craft as a child, and I'm not harmed by them. And so that kind of like gives me the okay that, okay, maybe this will be interesting and I need to understand this. And so I agree. And then I get taken up. I'm inside of a large craft, and it's just the basics of it is that she shows me my future, and I don't understand it as my future, but she's telling me it's my future. And it's really just, again, not how we would want the information to be. It's just holograms, and they're abstract ideas. They're just these cuboids with kind of colors and things going through them, and I don't understand it. And she's saying, this is your future, and this is what we're here to help you with. And we are here to help you because you're going to, you know, you have a series of events that are going to happen, and we're going to help you with that. I'm like, it doesn't make any sense to me, but she's explaining I have their DNA. And that's the part where all this starts kind of making sense for me as a teenager, because I'd already felt out of place, and there was something going on where there was a connection that I could kind of feel, I guess. And so that was it. It was kind of really basic, and it was answering some parts of my childhood and answering some parts of myself by interacting with them in that moment. So I agreed. And the agreement was, we're here to help you discover your soul. You're going to leave society when you do, and we're going to watch you. So it seemed like an experiment on their behalf. They're going to do this thing with me, and then you're going to experience your soul, and then we're going to watch you, and we're going to be a part of all this. Do you agree? And they wanted my agreement, and I agreed. And then right then and there, on my first contact event, is this most extreme event that I think any human can have. And so there's the terrifying stuff, which they did, but it wasn't too terrifying. It's more that the entities are very powerful, and that can be very intimidating to be around. But they were always actually pretty benevolent and very kind, actually, and very soft. But they're intense to be around. And this next thing, so what they end up doing is, so yeah, the agreement is to discover my soul, and that 16 year old contact event, they're going to do it right there. And it becomes the basis for everything else that happens forward. So what they do is they take me to a room. I call the room the white room. Hey, I've actually found other contactees who've had this room. Me and Susie Hansen, this is part of our whole thing. We both been in the same room. She talks about it. She calls it the cosmic relaxation room or something. Linda Porter from Linda Moulton Howe's investigations. That's Linda Porter is in a soul transfer room created by the Mantis. I'm certain that's the same space. It's described in the exact same kind of way. And the aliens used it on me to turn me into an orb. So the experience is that I get inside, and it's a dimensionless space with no walls. It's kind of just this very too large for how small the craft is. It's just this kind of very, very huge, empty environment, pure white. And eventually the alien I'm dealing with steps forward and says, what's going to happen is going to be beyond your comprehension. And she steps back, and I begin floating, and my body dissolves. And what's remaining, obviously, is, I guess, this ghost me or the ethereal body. And that collapses, and I become an orb. And it's a bliss rush is my only description. Pure childhood, child energy, bliss rush. And the identity is removed. Not removed, but, you know, I'm not me. I'm not the 16-year-old anymore. I'm this thing. And it's instant elation. It's just, there's nothing. I don't think anything humans have can create it. But Kundalini rising might be the closest. But it's intense. And then they start playing around, and they're in this state, and we're in a unity state. Like this unity happens in the environment. So the craft is alive, and you feel the unity of the craft. You feel all the entities, and they're in play. And it's, you know, I really think, well, I haven't found too many people who oppose this idea. It's actually really interesting. The entities definitely are, you know, emotionless when it comes to the face and comes to their demeanor. But my whole point is that, well, I think that this is their state, that they're so removed that they're so dimensional, that they're so in this kind of purity state that that they come off as unemotional and they're detached from human emotions. I think they think some of these emotion things are willy-nilly. They're like, oh yeah, don't worry about it. And you're the one panicking and terrifying. Yep. Like, yeah, don't worry, you'll be fine. And that's kind of their mind. Yep. They're like, whatever. And and then they're in this hyper enlightened, benevolent, it's like super purity. And that's what I got to experience. And it was unity. And within it, they're not too unsimilar to humans in the sense that they have laughter. It was joy for them. So it was all the kind of positive, powerful experiences that a human would have. And what it did too was erased the idea that I was dealing with aliens and I was dealing with something very similar to me. And so it just emblazoned that into me right away as a 16-year-old. Then it's a big contact event. Then this entity I'm dealing with turns into a portal. She's like, come in. And what it is, it's a sequence of events that she shows me. The sequence of events are just, I can only describe as holograms because I don't understand it. And I'm actually kind of convinced they're holograms of real events because I'm having a shared experience. So what I witness, I get into this environment, it's all blacked out and there's a dead body. And over the dead body is a sparkling energy, kind of like a soul. And I'm having instant connection with it. That's me. And I can feel it's the past me. It's my past life. It's the last life I just had. And I can feel the passage of time. So there's like, it's in this, it was like 70, I could feel like almost 70 years had passed since that death and then who I was as a 16-year-old. And so it would have placed it in the 40s or the 30s. And he was dead, but the spirit is over top of the dead body and it's crying. So death was obviously really hard. And I'm in shock. Everything is just shocking for this orb me. But I'm watching as this sparkling energy, you know, it's moving up and moving up, moving up as it's kind of releasing itself to death. And then it passes over into a veil. And they're literally a veil. I will basically go to my deathbed believing that the afterlife realm is a purposely separated realm from the human realm because it had this kind of, and maybe this is the Schumann resonance, right? That we all kind of know now about this Schumann resonance, this electromagnetic field that sits over the earth, a spherical electromagnetic field. And maybe that's what it is that keeps, maybe that's something to do with the afterlife. I'm not really clear, but it passed a veil. Yeah, go ahead.
You're saying veil. Do you mean veil? Sorry, I think it's a veil.
Yes,
you
passed through a veil. Yes, sorry, yes.
Sorry, just
accent. A boundary, right, yeah. I should probably just say that.
A boundary, so, yeah. A threshold.
Distinct moment, a distinct something. And the feeling also is that this is kind of possibly, you know, this is in the upper atmosphere of Earth. And so it could be in outer space. And so this past life me is going up and it passes over it. And when it does, it transforms into this other me. This is what I can only call the higher self. So it is the no space, no time me, the intuitive me. And so it's not me, right? So I always kind of like, I always try to like make that distinction with people that it's not me. I have the higher self in me. I'm an offshoot of the higher self. I'm a product of the higher self, but I'm an identity that's made of the brain in this realm right now. And I'm Jeff Selver. And then my higher self seems to be the one that's kind of planning all the lives. And it's the intuitive me. That's all I can just frame it. The moments I had, those intuitive moments in my traveling years and, you know, the spiritual journey I've had, that thing, it becomes a fully personified me. And in the afterlife. And so that's what I witness is this transformation. And then it's detached from all the pain that the last life just had. It has like no attachment to it. And then the great alien that I'm inside of, like in this portal, seemed to have overlay an image over top of this higher self of a man with a beard and a white gown. And there was this, in the sharing of experience, I could feel there was a higher, I could feel the dimensionality kind of behind it. So it was kind of an image overlaid, I guess, for my conscious mind. So I'd be able to take it back with me. And that's what I'm convinced of anyway. So, and then right away in the afterlife, the gray alien is kind of saying like, watch this. It wants me to see the whole, you know, scenario that unfolds. And then I'm watching as my higher self is in the afterlife and a gray alien approaches my higher self. And then it's clear to me. I kind of have a shocking moment of they're here in this realm. So the gray aliens are in this afterlife realm. And, you know, it's in a corporal form too. It wasn't in a sparkling energy, or it was a corporal form gray alien interacting with this man who had the beard with the gown, who was my higher self. And they seem to be, I'm not getting the kind of specifics. It's kind of like a vibe coming off of the interaction, the vibe off of them. And I can hear or like feel or get the emanations that this is the gray aliens are asking if my higher self wants to help them, partake in helping. Mm-hmm. And with the obvious idea here that my higher self agreed with them for me to work with the gray aliens, the idea. And that's what they're showing me in this very moment as it's all kind of basically unfolding. It's an intense series of events that kind of unfold here, but I'll leave that for the book.
There's so much to your story. It's all in the book, as you say. Yeah. But I have so many questions, Jeff.
Yeah, please, yeah.
What are they getting out of it? Because I asked my mob this morning. I was listening to you this morning before we came on live. Yeah. And I got an answer and I went, but I want to ask you that question. So what is the agreement? We're going to show you who you really are outside your identity, your human identity, and through the veil of forgetfulness or the river of oblivion.
Right.
So we're going to give you this experience. What are you giving their community?
So, okay, this is an agreement. Yeah, you got it. There's more to this picture here. So they energize me. Maybe it's a download. You can almost call it a download, right? I witnessed the higher self. I was in a pure elated state. And then when I come out of that, I'm transformed. I'm altered as a 16-year-old. They seal up the memory. I'd really love, you know, a psychologist or someone who understands neurology to even try to understand if they were able to freeze time. Could you show someone the afterlife and then have them not know it, right? Because like that's kind of what happens here, where I'm as a teenager, I'm affected by it, but I don't have the self-reflective abilities. I don't study spirituality at the time. I'm not meditating. I'm not doing anything. I'm a teenager. So then it's there. It imprints itself with a dream that was part of my life. I always remember the dream that was produced from this contact event, but I had no knowledge that something as pronounced as seeing my afterlife had happened. But what happens is that every time I meet the aliens, the memories, the best way I can frame this is that they're opening up the same spot in the brain, wherever that spot is. And I'm interacting with them, the same spot opens back up. And then I'm affected by what had happened previously. So that second contact event, so I talked earlier in our presentation about the second contact event where I was lured out into the forest. Well, the screen memory is interlaced with me waking up to the afterlife self of like, oh, having that. And I have an intense shock in the forest with this gray alien. And that becomes the compactificated memory of this kind of like elation of that memory being busted back open. And I'm like transformed in the forest with the gray alien. And so what's really going on is that I'm being transformed into something. And that's transforming me in my genetics. So as you talked earlier, there's a good genetic activation here.
Yep.
Well, that all becomes very valuable for them. So they take my biology. So the year 1998 is a very biological year. And that's pretty much. And then I witness the rest of my contact events after that biological year, though there's some other things. The gist of it is that I witnessed the making of hybrids.
Yes.
And so the hybrids were used with, humans mixed with their higher state dimensionality, produced hybrids that will be put on Earth, and there'll be higher state dimensional hybrids.
Yeah,
that's the kicker. And I wasn't aware of that in the agreement. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that.
That's the answer I got when I asked this morning, because I was listening to you on somebody else's show, on Jeff Myra's show, actually. I'll call out to Jeff.
Yeah, it was a great interview. Great job. He's good.
Love Jeff. And I'm like, okay, what's the agreement? What are they getting? And the mob, my mob said to me, it's the genetic component. It's the upgrading of their body. And I'm like, if they're so intelligent and so connected to source, like, how did it go so wrong with the whole physical thing? And they said, yeah, they told me a whole lot about it. But yeah, so interesting, so fascinating. So they, when you said very genetic for you, so they were taking your genetic makeup, they were taking your DNA, they were taking your cells, taking your sperm and cells, and being a part of the hybrid, upgrading there, and mixing it with the gray body and the human body, and creating a new species, a new human.
A new species. Yeah. And it's and you know, I do agree with some of it. That's the problem. It's a problem because it's terrifying. It's let's just say humans are not comfortable with this stuff. And I wasn't at the time. And that's why the story's there. I go right into fight mode with them. And I'm fighting with them. And then I kind of learn, no, this is right. There's a higher level to this that is more about nature and much less about human ideas of dominance or creepy creatures. And this is actually something that's going to benefit humans. And I do walk away believing that. And that's kind of what the story is actually about. Yeah.
Well, we've been doing it on Earth for eons of time. I mean, we've been doing it with our animals and plants and intermixing different species and, so we've got like Asians and white people and black people and yellow people, and we kind of get together and have babies and create new species. I mean, it's just a thing about what happens, you know, it's creativity. The whole story of what happened to their physical form is a whole other show. But I just want to remind people, I'm loving this story, Jeff. You're amazing. Thanks. That we're streaming live on the United Public Radio Network on 107.7 FM and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Isn't it amazing that there's a UFO Paranormal Radio Network? You love that. I love that there's a radio network that's called UFO Paranormal. That's on 105.3 out of New Orleans, and also streaming all over the internet. You can catch the recording of this show on my YouTube and the UFO Paranormal Radio YouTube. And I want to say hi to everybody, John and Thirsty and Shirley and Diane, people tuning in. Thanks for tuning in. No questions yet. They're just saying, oh, this is cool. Nice. I want to get into, in the next half hour that we've got left, I want to get into the spiritual principles and how it dovetailed with your Vedic knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
What they taught you and what you're teaching, or we're teaching, spiritual teachers are teaching humanity about who they are, their multidimensional selves, and what's possible for them.
Yeah,
what's the sort of main message that they, or you as a human knowing this, want people to know?
So the core of everything is that we are God, right? The unified field is real, and we are God, and that's fact. I would say that's fact. I don't know that we humans know that to be fact yet, but I think that that's the world they're living in, is that that's fact. And and I think that that's part of the mystery here, is that their whole tech, their ships, they're all utilizing it. And it's that they've mastered this stuff. And that's the core of the message. Now, how does that translate to the human? I think, you know, it was actually really cool. You mentioned in the beginning the kind of way it was all fragmented in the early years, right? Paranormal was one thing, and aliens were another thing, and you had Vedic masters another thing, and all this stuff was kind of fragmented. And I think that when you put it all together as God, then that fragmentation, you start correcting some of the ideas of that fragmentation. I guess correcting is maybe not the best word, but I'm trying to think of here, like, I have some. The aliens gave me paranormal experiences. So I ended up kind of having this kind of understanding about the paranormal realm. And I ended up having some mediumship experiences, stuff I was never part of my life, and just kind of stumbled upon my plate. And it turned out to be very similar to how I handled the aliens. And so I was able to interact with a ghost, and I helped transition a ghost.
Yeah.
It's on my YouTube channel. And it's just part of these wacky stories about what it means to be interacting with aliens. But the thing that came out of that was, you know, the realm of the paranormal, if we are disassociating everything from God, from the higher self, then the human will always kind of have this loose energy about things. We aren't able to ground our own energy, and you can mistranslate things, right? I think the ghost I dealt with would have definitely been considered a demon. It was a disgusting environment it was in. It was awful to be around. It felt gross. And yet, you know, having, you know, studying the Vedic and the meditation and listen, I focus on God. That's my joy, is to connect with my unity, to feel unity, to work to finding that in other people. That thing, I could feel it in that ghost. I could feel its higher self, and it knew I could feel it.
Yeah.
And then it seeked my help. That was the whole kind of weird part about it, and is that it saw that I could see its truth. And then it was like, hey, I need your help. And it was the one telling me, I need you to help me transition, because it wanted out. And so the whole, I put it on video. If people want to watch that, it's on my YouTube channel. But that's power. The point I'm trying to say here is the God element of the self is the power in a paranormal realm. And I'm 100% convinced the aliens are coming. And I'm 100% the aliens are going to make the world paranormal. Meaning that you can't even interact with these entities without it discharging or opening up in you your own paranormal self. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know what God is inside of you, then your energies go haywire. So it's this kind of, you need to have the higher self in you. You need to. Actually, it's like life or death. I mean, not life or death, but it's definitely survival. I think we'll be in a new realm with the aliens interacting with us, can open up things that are all just nature, by the way, not crazy creatures that dominate, but, you know, nature. And nature in the realm of the paranormal starting to open up might change the way humans interact with our own world. And the God element, I think, is the whole missing part. If you find the God inside yourself, you become powerful. And then you also can manipulate the universe. And that's what the visioning aspect was when I traveled. That's how I was able to change my timeline, change my circumstances, materialize the things I need to materialize, is by relying on my God self, my higher self. So that's the ultimate message here, is that God is involved. The unified field is involved. And and it empowers us in a paranormal realm, and it empowers us for our abilities. The other aspect is, I think you talked about early about psychic abilities, and we talk about people have like remote viewing and there's past life awareness. Well, all of this stuff, that's what the God realm is. And I think that when people, when they go when they ground it in the God aspect, you ground those abilities. And that's the other aspect I believe too, is that you aren't just learning some, you know, power that we might have, but you're actually learning who you are, which is the kind of the God element. And then those powers open up naturally. And there's a real much more natural, grounded reality to opening up these parts of ourselves. And so I think of the God's part, which is what they showed me, and then my Vedic practice, all of that says one thing. God is all. God is real. You are God. We are God. All that's God. Everything's God. And then all this stuff, which is real, very real for us, paranormal, psychic, you know, past lives, remote viewing, all this stuff is all offshoots of that. And if we don't come from that aspect, then we have the potential to kind of be a loosey-goosey haywire energy and kind of possibly produce things we don't want to be producing.
Yeah, Penny says, that's awesome. I agree, Penny. Yes. It is absolutely the most important puzzle piece of all these conversations. I mean, the experience here on planet Earth is the experience of separation. Separation to what? Separate to your source, separate to each other, separate to love. And that's the experience that we've had on planet Earth. So the experience in other dimensions or on other planets or in other realms is that they realize they're all one with that you could call it God, you could call it grace, you could call it love, you could call it power.
Right. Yeah.
I don't matter what you call it, but we're one with that.
Yeah.
And that knowing fundamentally shifts the whole experience that you're having, no matter what planet you're on, right? No matter what realm you're in, because there are realms where you can leave your body and still feel separate to source. And like you met a ghost that said, help me. So they're still believing I'm separate to my soul or my source or my higher self, and I'm in a realm, not in a physical body, but I'm in a realm, and I'm separate to that. So can you help me? So that is the puzzle piece. It is the fundamental backbone foundation of all suffering on this planet is feeling separate to love, separate to God, separate to love, separate to your source, separate to your power. And every desire stems from, you know, I want to be rich, I want to be wealthy, I want to be healed, I want to be, you know, in love, comes from that belief that I'm separate to what I want. So it's so amazing. Well, it's not amazing, but like the ETs know this, like greys that we've deemed as like little devils and evil, and like they know this stuff. It's their default setting.
It's the default setting. It's so and it doesn't mean that the nature of the universe still isn't fantastical for science, right? It doesn't mean that, and I think that's kind of what where this is going, the ability to freeze time, that time might be something that we don't understand yet, that they're able to utilize that, is still saying that there's the kind of mental aspect that fascinates us is still part of this. I think we kind of have these ideas that, you know, the God realm or the or these other realms, the afterlife, we all just fade into nothing, and it's all this very comforting thing because we can't conceive of where it goes. And I feel like the aliens are saying, no, that realm that is considered the God realm still has a whole basket of scientifically fun things that are that change the dimensions of physics. And I think that's the because paranormal is nature and aliens are nature, and these things are nature. It's all aspects of kind of nature spanning out. And this is, it just might be that the universe was not what we thought it was, and we are the odd ones out. That's always how I like to frame it.
We are the odd ones out. I mean, the experience of forgetting does give you an amazing ride. Like, I think that from our source perspective, when we look at this experience, I often think about this on a daily basis.
Nice.
My friend David and I talk about this. It's like he says to me, don't you find when you're doing something really mundane, like you're in the supermarket shopping, like from your higher perspective, you think, God, this is so much fun. And I said, supermarkets, no, but I can get where you're coming from, you know, like the earth experience, the human experience.
That's it. Well, because that's my life. And so, you find the mundane things. You find the what would be considered mundane, because existence is the embodiment of existence is actually when you can appreciate it. And so much we are able to tune into or connect with, then sitting on your couch and wondering how your friend is doing and peering in to hope that they're okay because you knew that they were in trouble is just a freaking wild aspect of life. And you're right. And that separation is what makes that very exciting for us. And even past lives, I get fascinated by past lives, and I get fascinated by how that, what's going on there. And it's all just aspects of the separation. And when you start living like that, going to the shopping, the supermarket is kind of a fun adventure for your life. I agree with those kind of simple things.
I was watching some stuff on television where they're trying to figure out like crime mysteries. Oh, yeah, that's right. There was someone that went missing, and like it was like 40 years later they found them. But so for 40 years, his family, he'd been killed. That's right. And they were trying to find out who the murderer was. So for 40 years, they wondered. And I'm thinking, if you live in a telepathic society, none of that is possible. Like none of the mystery that we experience as earthlings, like who done it, where are they, what's happening, because we're under this veil of forgetfulness. None of that is possible in these higher realms, because you're like, you want to know, just tune in and you've got the access. So I often wonder when police are like trying to figure stuff out, why they aren't just talking to psychics.
Occasionally they do. Occasionally you get the story of some chief or whatever who relies on them. And there's fascinating breakthroughs 100% through psychics. But it's a weird world too, right? Like we're in this kind of middle ground where it's very easy for charlatans so it's a really weird game right now.
It's easy for charlatans because most people don't have access to that aspect of themselves where they can access their own information. And even when they do, and my tribe that are online know because I teach this stuff, even when they do have access, they'll doubt it. Am I getting that right?
Yeah.
Like one of our members died at the end of last year, and And when I was looking for her in spirit, I so didn't want her to be dead that I didn't have that access. And I work as a psychic and a medium, right? Right, but because of my desire for her to still be in the body, I don't know why, because she's happy out of the body, like really happy. And she was in a very sick body. But I'm still human, right? I'm still carrying the human thing. And with that human understanding, I found I couldn't access her immediately because I was had an attachment to that. It's easier for me to access people I don't know because I have no attachment. But I want to get back to the paranormal. That's what you said about people, you know, getting involved in paranormal stuff like seeing ghosts and not having that connection to the God component, the source component, the higher self perspective. Yeah. So when you do expand your psychic abilities and you start seeing ghosts and talking to aliens and, you know, when you're still believing that your subconscious programming is who you are, I'm not good enough, I'm a failure, I can't get it right. Like, and you expand your psychic abilities, now you're a holy mess. Like you're a mess.
Yeah. A mess. Mental health. I do know some people who it can go into a mental health crisis, and it's not good. Yeah, and also you can't. There's an element of that realm, right? You would know this then as a medium. That's a mirroring effect, right? So you got that deep. You haven't approached your shadow. You got something that you're scared of. You've had some kind of abuse in the past, and you're scared of something, or you're resisting something. You just spit it back out, and you convince yourself that the sky is filled with dark evil forces that fight all day long. And I see it in the eyes of, and I've seen that. I've seen people talk like that. I see it in the eyes of the stranger. They're fighting dark evil demons inside themselves. I'm like, whoa, back up. And it's because they haven't found that source element and their psychic abilities are very open and exposed. It's nothing to say. I think you find source in that process, right?
So this teaching that the ETs are giving you, the fundamental teaching that we are, as Esther Hicks would say, we are an extension of source energy. We are God.
Right.
Is so important as humanity does awaken to their multidimensional layering, their psychic abilities, their telepathic abilities, and they can project consciousness and all that sort of stuff. They really need to clean up their subconscious programming.
Yeah.
The programming of not enoughness, not good enough, failure, all that fear, clean up the fear so that they can. Ghostbusters, Frozen employee, good film. Is that Dylan? has anyone got any questions? A friend of mine is talking about being contacted by ETs very soon. He's a little fearful. What advice would Jeff have for him about his fears? From Bernard. Okay, question, because we've only got about 10 or 15 minutes left. What would you say about people who, so a friend of mine is talking about being contacted and we haven't got into the enlightened city on earth yet. I might have to get you back for that conversation.
Please. I'm all open for that. That's great. Yeah.
What would you say to people who are fearful about being contacted by ETs?
I don't quite understand the question. Like, so I think that I'm hearing that he thinks it's going to happen. I don't know what people, a friend of mine is talking about being contacted by ETs very soon. They're talking about it. So they haven't, and the aliens, I've never known aliens to do this, but that's very fascinating. So I think that, listen, if that's true and that's happening, then what I would suggest is to your fear of death. So I think that the fear of death is what holds us into the body. And I'm not saying you're going to die. I'm definitely saying that that fear is the deep shadow in all of us. And you can't even approach the God part of yourself if you're holding on with a fear of death. And I think that fearlessness is the critical part of interacting with the entities. And an example of this I always give is, like, why are humans scared of ghosts, right? Like, we have this kind of like traditional idea of that we're scared of ghosts. And the ghost, it's not that the ghost is actually scary because it's just an invisible person, but the ghost triggers inside the human that kind of illicit fear that sits within us. And so they're actually not scared of the ghost. They're scared of what it's doing to the human inside of themselves. And they get terrified and they want to run out. Right? But that fear is innate. Yeah. And if you can't interact with an alien, At least not my, not the Gray Lantern, not these guys, because they get right in and the entire environment and everything. You have to approach that fearlessness aspect of the self.
Yeah.
It has to happen, or else you'll project everything. And I've actually seen this too, where someone said, you know, I was in my bedroom and an entity was in the corner and it was the darkest and evilest entity I'd ever seen. I'm like, you know, you might be projecting, right? Like that could be happening, right? Like you're just terrified of something inside yourself because it's just sitting there and you're saying it's the darkest and evilest demon creature thing. And I, you know, that's the bottom line, is that if you don't address your fears, you project them back onto the entity. And that's all that ends up happening. So you have to approach your fears. That's the main part of dealing with these ETs.
Absolutely. And I think education, like what you're doing, Jeff, you know, getting your message out there, like the ETs said to you, you call them the aliens. I like to call them Star Nation family or Galactic ambassadors. Galactic family. The galactic family have said to you.
All of our language, the language is limited, right? So we all have kind of varied versions of the language. It's good. It's good.
Because alien, there's so much, you know, connected to the word alien, as in, like we even call foreigners from another country, they're alien. Yeah. So they're not one of me. They're from somewhere. They're not one of us. Right. You know, it's like there's a whole sort of conditioning around that word. But very quickly, before we go, we've got 10, 15 minutes left.
Yeah.
Jeff, please advise if you can. What things I can do to encourage my guides, higher self, and those positive ETs to initiate more contact with me? Yeah, that's a big question. We'll get back to you, John. But what is the what's the name of the book? The
book?
Enlightened City on
Arising,
Earth.
And the alien plan to build an enlightened city on Earth.
What is the plan? What's the plan to build? What's the plan to build the alien city on Earth?
The hybrids. So it's the hybrids are coming, and so around the hybrids coming, the word enlightened is my word. So they never use that word. And it's the bottom line is that the experience that they gave me, I understand that the human thing that we call enlightenment is just the base. That's the first space that they're in. I think the way I frame this is that all humans who you consider to be enlightened are actually kindergarten. And these guys are PhDs. And everybody who's not enlightened aren't even in the school yet. And that's the level that I think that we're dealing with. I think this is such an advanced level on their behalf that we can only start approaching their ideas by the human concepts of enlightenment. And so we're talking about a dimensional environment. And I know that because of the tech and some of the experiences I have on the craft. And when I say dimensional, I mean space and time and dimensional of the self. So the no space aspect of yourself, the no time aspect of yourself, meaning your past lives, your future lives, your ability to, remote view, but I just consider it no space. So your ability to kind of peer into realities in other places. And those are aspects of their world. And then that's an enlightenment, that those core ideas and the ideas of even the white room I talked about earlier about turning into an orb. I'm pretty convinced that, you know, for those who are ready for such a thing, the aliens are well known for sharing tech. There are plenty of contact events that are part of researchers' databases where the aliens share tech. And so an idea of them being placing themselves on planet Earth with a city environment, you're going to have access to a white room if you're ready for it. And so you could get turned into an orb, and then you can even get training around that. Those are they told me those specifics, but from everything I know what's going on here, that is exactly what I'm convinced is happening. And the aliens are very sharey. They share this stuff. People drive crafts. This is how this goes. Any idea is outside of the realm of what I understand the aliens to be. So they want us to be growing. They want us to be developing. They want us to be doing those things. And so the enlightened city, that's the concept of it, is that it's a dimensional aspect of the self. And an enlightened aspect of the self and the God aspect. And then from there, you're living in the environment with which these entities live in. And I'm convinced it'll be humans. I'm convinced it'll be hybrids. And I'm convinced there'll be some traditional aliens in there as well too. And it's kind of galactic in that sense that humans can learn about these other places that we've kind of don't have access to from our comprehension in part, and also because those aliens don't want us knowing about them. I think there's a bit about that until we're ready for that kind of stuff. So the city kind of helps with that kind of transition. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a group called the Alliance for Extraterrestrial Contact that are, for the last 20 years or so, they've been talking about it. They've got the money, that are building an extraterrestrial embassy for first contact. They're building a physical place where people can come and meet. That's their plan. I don't know when they're going to do it. They've been talking about it for over 20 years. They are connected to the Rael group, who is this guru that said he was contacted by the ETs. They call the ETs the Elohim.
Oh, I've seen something about this. That's right.
Yeah, there's a doco on Netflix, which is not very
that's
nice,
right,
about the Rael.
Someone shared that with me at my work. That's correct. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Very interesting.
So you're still working in the corporate world?
Sort of. Yeah, I have a corporate position within a company I'm in. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. I found a job that I actually really like now, and it treats me well, and most people know about what I'm doing here. So
I think that's so cool that you're still inside society, so to speak, human society, mainstream society, and that you're openly talking about this. And then, as you said, when David Grush and all the politicians come out and they start talking about it, they go, yes, high five. I just think that is so cool. There's so many people who start talking about this professionally leave their corporate world. But it's nice to still be inside that society. Like, I'm surrounded by, everyone has this conversation. The people that I went to school with that don't want the conversation, they don't want to talk to me either. They don't want to be around me. But, the world is changing exponentially. Yeah. The world is changing. And for all those people that feel judged and ridiculed by family and colleagues and co-workers, with all this stuff being disclosed through government, they're all going to come to you and say, what do you know about this stuff? You've been talking about this stuff. We didn't believe you. But look, the government are talking about it. What's Diane saying this here? I appreciate hearing these conversations. Thank you for your company. I sit here on a spring break from school. Yeah, Diane's a teacher. Nice. So John wanted to know how to contact his guides and his ET. What are you saying here, John? Would you please advise? This is quite a big, I don't know if it's going to come up. I think it's too big. Okay. Please advise, if you can, what things I can do to encourage my guide's higher self and these positive ETs to initiate more communication with me, if only telepathically.
Yeah, it's a, that realm, it's, I think that, is it the Bible? Jesus was a master, right? So
Jesus was an ET.
sure. But the religious aspect is humans, taking his message. But he said something along the lines of like, one step, you take one step forward, and then the universe takes 10 steps towards you. And I think that actually is very real. There's you when you kind of look for that confirmation, you can kind of get it. But the authentic self, right? You have to authentically be looking for that source, that connection. Listen, I've happened for me where I've kind of said, and it's a weird game, actually. There's a weird game going on here of the mind and the way the mind interacts with the universe. I think if you're saying, God, I don't believe in you, can you show me a sign? Maybe it shows itself to you. It's a weird game where you have to say, okay, I believe in that universe. I know I'm connected. I know it. Now I'm going to go live out my life. And then the universe kind of does things. It's kind of this weird game where you're looking for proof. The universe is like, man, I'm not here to play kind of games for you. And then when you believe and you rely, then you have that kind of that flow, I guess, that kind of state of flow. And I think those are the aspects of it. It's not, for me, it's not a game of it's the authentic self. So if I can get into a state where I'm purposely believing in and living in, then the universe kind of flows with me in these things. And I think that's the way to kind of work with it, to not live into a state of like, I need that contact. Live in a state that you already are connected and you already are in contact. And I think that you change the game of the universe. And, my Vedic teacher, the guru, one of his lines is that your life should be filled with miracles. It should be like a regular everyday thing going on for you. And
synchronicity after synchro destiny, Deepak used to call it years ago, but synchronicity after, like, I have a thought and then somebody's having that conversation and I'm like, I was just thinking about that. And then I'm having that conversation and then I'm having another conversation with somebody else and it's the same conversation. It's just this continual synchronistic event.
Yeah. But, I'll say one thing to John there. And maybe there is one element which I really always want to emphasize, because I'm a big believer in this: meditation, doing something with which you regularly connect. So whatever, if it's meditating with a tree in the forest, or you're meditating with yourself or whatever it is. I just, you know, the ritual aspect, I guess it changes the beta waves. It changes the waves, the brain waves. And I think that the human requires that. I think this is an aspect of the human. If we are just going about living our lives and you're living in the rush and hush of the life, and then you're hoping one day kind of God sets in or your higher self says something, I think it's kind of the give and take. You have to kind of, I'm going to commit myself to my own development and believe I'm connected. I think that's how you get that flow going.
Exactly. I started this show to teach people about their powers of creation, to how to be deliberate. And when we're in the questioning mind, when we're saying how, you know, and the universe gives you that experience of how, but when you take the how out of it and you say, I am, when you use the I am. So I am connected to my guides. I am connected to ET contact. And you start to believe that and feel it like it's happening. Then Wayne Dyer used to say, when you believe it, you will see it. Yeah. So when you're asking how, like, where are my keys? Where are my keys? Where are my keys? And then you say, oh, forget it. I can't find them. And you give up the questions. Then the keys are like right on the coffee table. It's like, I didn't see them before. Sink. Yeah. So get out.
Sink
get
your
out
keys. Of the- Sink your keys. It works every time. Key, sink your keys. Are you? And you just get relaxed. You start singing. And all of a sudden you're like, I want to go and look in that pocket. And all of a sudden you pull them out. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. My alarm clock's going off because we've got 5 minutes left of the show.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this is also something that higher dimensional beings that we have called aliens or ETs know, that they are the creators of their reality and that their thoughts are powerful. I mean, you know that when you're dead, not all dead people, because like you say, you can meet some ghosts in other realms that still don't realize that the sort of hellish experience they're in is just their mental looping and that they're creating the world around them, whether it be good or bad. But under this buffer of time, we don't realize how powerful our thoughts are. So
yes,
when we say, I know something, I know how to do this. This is happening to me. When you make the statement of I am, or this is happening, and you feel it, you put emotion behind it, it becomes your reality, good or bad. And most people, like the ETs, I think they just laugh at how much chaos we create in this world. Because we don't understand the power of our thoughts. And so we get all upset about stuff and we put heaps of emotion behind it and judge and criticize and get angry. Yeah. And then we create more chaos. And they're like sitting back looking and laughing, going, these kids need some education.
Right. And they give someone a contact event that's really extreme. And they got it. That's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Then they do what they did to you. Oh, honeywine, it's been such a joy having you on the show. There's so much.
Yeah, Karen. Yeah, you got it. It's been fantastic. I love your work here. I love what you do, and it's fantastic. Yeah, really appreciate
you. I've got a million more questions for you, and thanks, John, for all your questions. What's Dylan saying here? Marilyn Manson sees his dead grandmother and grandfather in his room. He's a kid. Yeah, look, you know, dead people. I see dead people all the time. Dead people are
especially
fabulous.
When they're connected to you. Especially when you're connected, you'll always It's because they might have been the ones to come to him, right? So that's the trick there. They're the ones who connect to him. Yeah.
This is what John's saying. This is education, John, because, I mean, I think in the book Conversation with God, he talks about education is to remember what you already know.
Yeah.
You know, like when you inform somebody, we are God information, information. We are God in form. But, and so education is to draw out something that they already know. And John says, yeah, I knew the answer to that. I already knew the answer to that. Like, we all know inside
but
the answer.
I always have compassion for this kind of stuff, because what he still did was a sense of intention. And that intention was to clarify his own thoughts.
Yeah.
And it's still brilliant and still part of creative and still beautiful, because he could be educating someone else in the process. So it's still to have compassion with this stuff too. It's brilliant.
Yeah. So I want to remind people that you've been listening to Accentuate the Positive on the United Public Radio Network on 107.7 FM and then UFO Paranormal Radio Network on 105.3 FM. Coming out of New Orleans, and we've also been streaming on my YouTube, ATP Media, and their YouTube, the UFO Paranormal, and on Facebook and all over the place. It's been so much fun. I'm just getting used to this live because I've been doing it for the last 10 years. I used to be live. I was telling Jeff before, 5 years I was live on radio doing Sydney radio. And then I got, for the last almost 10 years, I've just been recording the show. So I haven't been dependent to a clock and looking at the clock all the time. So I'm getting used to it all over again. And I can't edit the show, so whatever we say goes out there live.
Yeah, right.
Goes out there live. But thanks, Penny, for tuning in, and John and everybody. Absolutely.
Yeah, and thanks again.
I'm going to create a page just for Jeff, and I'll put all your information, and I'll put my Amazon links to the book. You can buy it on Jeff's website. You can buy it on mine. If you want to support ATP Media and you buy the book through my Amazon links, I think I get a couple of cents.
Nice.
So I'll put a link under the YouTube of my webpage where you can go and find Jeff's information and the links to his website and the Amazon and all that. Any last thing you want to say before we go? We've got a
You're all God. You're all God. You're all God. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Big love to you.
Bye.